Omagnanatimirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun nilitamnena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manopishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kada mayam tadati svapadam adatanas chidam tante idam jache puna puna shimam rupa padam bhoja Rajoham Syam Bhave Bhave Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvajutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mancha Kalpatarubhascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo. Sabhashitaye padapallava plavam, mahatpadam punya yasho mararehe, pavam budir vatsapadam param padam, padam padam yadvipadam, natesham. 58. This translation is taken from Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, text 51. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in the calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parang Padam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, this verse summarizes the knowledge presented in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are described as pallava, flower buds, because they are most tender and of a pinkish hue. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, the word pallava also indicates that Lord Krishna's lotus feet are just like desire trees, which can fulfill all the desires of the Lord's pure devotees. Even exalted devotees like Sri Narada, who are themselves the great shelter for the conditioned souls in this universe, personally take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Thus, it is natural that when Lord Krishna manifested himself as all the young boys and calves in Vrindavan, their parents were more attracted to them than previously. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and being all attractive, the ultimate object of everyone's love. And that's the safety point, to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And this is the preoccupation of the devotees, especially taking protection from Krishna. Goptritre vananam tata. This is part, the surrender process is focused on this, that Krishna is my protector. And those who take shelter in the material world are described as taking shelter of fallible soldiers. It's an illusory type of security that one gets in the material world. Deha patra kalatra desu atmasainyesu satsupi tesham pramato nidhanam pashyanapina pashyati. Although seeing that people are fallible in this world, still somehow or other I think that my body will protect me, my wife, husband, children, money, and so forth will protect me. But these are described by Shukadeva Goswami to be fallible soldiers. in the end, no one can protect us except for Krishna. And the more one enters into this conception of life, that Krishna is my protector and maintainer, this becomes the focal point of one's surrender. And the more that one takes shelter of the material world, thinking that this place is my home, or that I, even if it's not, I can, through my wit, I can make some arrangement here so that I'm protected. This is illusion, which will be dashed at some point. At least at death, Krishna says, Mrityu sarva harash chaham. I come as death and I take away everything. Sarva harash means everything must go. Nothing left behind. And that is the nature of the material world. In all of its aspects, it's unstable. And Krishna asks us to realize that when he tells Uddhava, Shruti pratyakshamaiti yam anamanam chatushpadam, that you should use all types of evidence to see that the material world is impermanent. Avanastanad. It doesn't have any real standing. It's here today and gone tomorrow. It's wispy and unreliable. And therefore, one who takes shelter in the material world, thinking that I'll find some solace here, is taking shelter in a dangerous place. There's a sign outside the material world that says, enter at your own risk. And what is risk? Padam padam yad vipadam. Danger at every step. Why is that warning there? That there's vipadam. Every step I take, it could be the last step that I take. We don't know because, I don't know because I'm in ignorance. And everywhere I step, there could be a hole. All around Vrindavan, there are holes unexpectedly because there's no permit process, apparently, for building or digging holes. And you can be walking at night and simply step into an open hole and break your leg. It's happened before to many devotees. And this material world is like that. We don't really know where we're stepping. We're moving forward with some kind of faith that I actually am safe in this material world, but it's not true. Therefore, this warning comes, padam padam yad vipadam. Vipadam means it's danger at every step. So there's a risk factor in the material world. And there's also a way in which Prabhupada describes how we must take risks in Krishna consciousness. So today I want to talk a little bit about risk and what it means. So first of all, I'll just tell you the origin of the word. It's a noun. And the definition is a situation involving exposure to danger. A situation involving exposure to danger. The possibility that something pleasant or unwelcome will happen. A person or thing regarded as likely to turn out well or badly as specified in a particular context or respect. A person or thing regarded as a threat or likely source of danger. A possibility of harm or damage against which something is insured. The possibility of financial loss. To expose someone or something valued to danger or harm or loss. To act or fail to act in such a way as to bring about the possibility of an unpleasant or unwelcome event. To incur the chance of unfortunate consequences by engaging in an action. These are some of the definitions of risk. And the word actually originates from an Italian word which means danger. So risk means danger. It means something bad could happen when you make a risk. Another definition, risk is the potential that a chosen action or activity, including the choice of inaction, will lead to loss, an undesirable outcome. The notion implies that a choice having an influence on the outcome sometimes exists or existed. Potential losses themselves may also be called risks. Any human endeavor carries some risk, but some are much more risky than others. And then there's a science called risk management. And when I sent out the topic for this, for today's topic, I don't think I had risk management, but you added it in, right? So risk management is the identification, assessment, and prioritization of risks. That is, some activities are more risky than others. So in risk management, we're identifying, assessing, and prioritizing risks. And there's a whole lot more about that because it's a science, risk management. It has to do with probability theory and so forth. Any of you have studied statistics before, there's a lot about that in statistics that goes into the actual practice of risk management to see what things are more risky than others. And those who sell insurance to us are very much preoccupied with this science because that's how they make money. And they figure out which activities are more risky. You can, within a certain degree of certainty, understand which things are more risky than others. Which people are more at risk for having a heart attack, for instance. There are certain signs, like, anyway, I won't go into them. But there are certain things that one can see in a person that you can say that this person's at risk for heart attack and so forth through understanding statistics. And so there's risk management that goes on in the material world. And ultimately, though, Rakhi Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Rakike, that if Krishna wants to protect one, then no one can harm him. And if someone wants to harm you, then or if Krishna wants some harm to happen to you, nobody can protect you. Satyadev Prabhu used to tell me about all kinds of cases where people should have died and they didn't, and where they shouldn't have died and they did. I asked him one time when we were having a walk in Japan, I said, how many people did you save? And he goes, I never saved anybody. I only prolonged their suffering. And he's anyway, he told me many graphic examples of people who are definitely goners, but then miraculously they just lived. And other people that seemed to have some benign or innocuous little virus or something like that, and then 2 days later they were just dead and they were perfectly healthy. So although there are ideas about risk management in the material world, ultimately the whole proposition is risky. And there's only one real shelter, and that is to take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is the only real shelter. He's the supreme controller. And he's the only one that can ultimately protect us in all kinds of circumstances. So this is the main business of the devotees, is to take shelter of Krishna and to remember that he's my protector, he's my maintainer. And these are two of the limbs of surrender to Krishna. Krishna is my protector. Krishna is my maintainer. And there are many pastimes in Vrindavan, especially conceived from the Govardhan Leela, in which the devotees there had been engaged in ritualistic ceremonies to propitiate Indra every year in the Indra Yajna. And then Krishna came along, 7-year-old boy, and he said, you know, what are you doing this for? Is this something you really think about? Or is this, you know, does it really do anything? Or you just do it because that's what everyone does. And he began speaking all kinds of intricate philosophy, talking karma mimamsa. And he charmed the mind of Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men. And after a while, they just did whatever he said. And he told them that you shouldn't do this. You should be more practical. You should worship Govardhan Hill. That's where we're really getting everything from. And So they said, well, how would you do that? So take all the stuff you were going to offer to Indra and just offer it to Govardhan. Actually, Krishna understood that Indra had pride in his heart. And out of mercy, he was going to cut down that pride. And we see that in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. We just discussed around Gaurapurnima time about how the Digvijay Pandit was very proud of his ability to defeat others in debate. He had a benediction from goddess Saraswati that she would appear on his tongue because he was worshipping her. And she gave him a boon that whenever you argue, whenever you debate, I'll appear there. And nobody could, practically everyone would just sign a sheet before they debated him. They could barely even understand what he was saying and so forth. And it's easy for pride to creep in. Pride creeps in. It's like a subtle little fog that can go under the door, through the cracks and everywhere else, and get into one's consciousness and obscure our vision of our being the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord nothing more. It's actually easy to be the servant of the servant. But when pride creeps in, then I begin to think that I'm important, I have so many abilities. And Kunti says, Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribir Edamana Bada Puman Naivar Hat Yavidatum Vai Tvama Kinshana Gocharam. This is a kind of intoxication that I'm very learned, I'm very beautiful and so forth, and I become proud, intoxicated, and then I lose my ability to pray to Krishna with sincere feeling. So Lord Chaitanya, of course, cut down the pride of the Digvijay Pandit and of others, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and especially Prakashananda Saraswati. But he did it in such a way as to preserve their dignity and to allow them to continue on in the process of devotional service. So this is done by someone who is nindadi shunya ridam, means in their heart they have not the desire to destroy others, but actually to lift them up. And even if they point out something or they deficiency in the other person or they chastise, because that quality of criticism for the sake of tearing someone down isn't there within the heart, then they're able to actually do good for them. And the person can accept it and improve. That's the art of giving criticism and so forth. So in the pastime, the residents of Vrindavan surrender to Krishna because worshipping Indra was a matter of maintaining their livelihood. There was a thought that because we depend on the cows and the cows depend on the grass and the grass depends on the rain, we should do something about this. This risk management, make sure that we're getting rain enough. And that comes, according to the Vedas, by worshipping Indra. And Krishna said, yeah, forget it. Just forget that. And ultimately, they took shelter of Krishna. And he said, just depend on me. Just depend on Govardhan. And he became Govardhan Hill. And this is one of the pastimes indicating the mood of the surrendered devotee. Vedeshu yagyeshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya palam pratishtam atyeti tat sarvam idam viditva yogi param stanam upaiti chajam. Krishna says in the last verse of the eighth chapter, that if you just worship me, you won't be bereft of performing all these sacrifices or giving in charity and so forth. And the devotees who cultivate this and progressively turn their attention and faith and take full refuge in Krishna, live in this instruction. Ananyas chintayantumam yejana pariupasate tesham nityabdyuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. Krishna says, just exclusively, without any other shelter, take shelter of me, think of me. After all, you can't think of Krishna unless you're really taking shelter of him and depending on him as your protector. Just imagine, when you sit down to chant japa, where does your mind go? Well, I can tell you where mine goes. It starts to solve all kinds of problems. There are so many things. I have to do this and that. But then I have to come back, as Krishna says, Shanai, Shanai, Rupadumed, gradually, step by step, bring the mind under control by the higher self. And then I'll say, I can't solve these problems, but Krishna can. And this is the mood of Vrindavan when the boys saw Agasura. And I think that's the picture you put in there too. When they saw Agasura, they thought, this is really dangerous. In fact, some of them ran away. And others said it was a real snake. Other ones said it wasn't a real snake. It was just a playground, because after all, there were so many, you know, miraculous things happening around Vrindavan. And then they all said, well, who cares what it is? We saw Krishna kill Bakasuras, and he'll protect us. So let's just go inside. And looking at the beautiful face of Krishna, they went inside. And they gave up their, you know, dependence on any kind of risk management, any calculation. They had their calculators out at first, and they were thinking, okay, snake, real, false, if he's real, what might happen, python species, what do they do to people, and so forth. And they just dropped it all, and they said, let's go inside. Complete act of faith. Walked into the mouth of this gigantic python. So, as I was saying, there are many thoughts coming into the mind, but when we chant Japa, we have an opportunity to say that I can't solve these problems, I can't fix them, and just take shelter of the holy name. It's a relief. Just like when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and everyone came under the hill, even though there were torrents of rain coming down, nobody was harmed, nobody was touched. So when we chant Hare Krishna, we take shelter under this protective umbrella. Apanasam shitim goran yannama bivisho granan tatasadyo vimucheta yad bipeti swayam bhayam. Krishna manifests personally in his name, and fear personified is afraid of Krishna, and therefore, Suta Goswami says, people can take shelter of the holy name, just like the residents of Vrindavan took shelter under Govardhan Hill. So similarly, we can take shelter under the Govardhan Hill of Krishna's holy name when we chant. And then all those external thoughts that I need to protect myself, they will simply be absorbed by Govardhan. They'll be repelled by him and by the holy name. And there's a great relief in this, that just let go, let Krishna. And take shelter of Krishna's name. And this is the essence of the lifestyle of a devotee, is to cultivate this more and more, that I'm simply taking protection from Krishna. And my calculations of how I'll live my life, which is necessary because we have two parts to our life, the Vyavaharika and Paramartika. Vyavaharika means the practical day-to-day responsibilities that I have to maintain my body and the bodies of, and minds of my family and so forth. And I have to walk around. Even it's easy to think about things. For instance, I've realized this. It's easy to think about writing a book. But actually writing a book is a little more difficult. And there are ways in which there are lots of, it's easy to talk a good game in this world, but to actually get things done, it requires you have to get up and walk out and go meet people and meet deadlines and so forth. The Vyavaharika part of our life requires some kind of study, arrangement, organization and so forth. And that must go on. Because one can't maintain oneself even without work, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. You have to work to some degree. And then we have our paramartika, or the supreme goal in life, that I actually have nothing to do with this world. But if you act like that, you'll be shunned, even in devotional society. I mean, sometimes people come into the association of devotees, and then they assume this false, artificial position, that I have nothing to do with the world. And then they become, again, consumed or absorbed back into the material world. There has to be balance in order to do that, in order to progress steadily on the path of devotional service. So to perform one's duties properly, one has to have a formula, and that's given in the Bhagavatam. Kamasya nendriya pritir labo jivita yavata jivasya tattva jignasya narto yashcheya karmabhi. How much should I do to maintain my family? How much should I push my children to learn French, Chinese, German, Sanskrit, and be in the drama club, the fencing club, the debating club, the... There must be many, many more than that. I have no idea about. So how much should I do all these things for my body, for my extended bodies and so forth? What's necessary for my career? Should I really put myself out and, you know, come to the top of my career as much as possible? And the Bhagavatam gives this. Do the best you can so that you can maintain your balance so that you can hear and chant. And if you go over the line and you're doing so much that you have no possibility of inquiring about Krishna. Inquiring is really a full-time occupation. When you really get into it, when you really want to know, you don't have time for other things. That's why Parikshit Maharaj, in 7 days, he didn't have time for eating and sleeping. Because this is our main instinct in human life, because this is the main gift we've been given. Atato Brahma Jignasa. That is the ability to acquire. That's the best ability that we have, inquiry ability. And when it becomes pronounced, when it starts to come out towards Krishna, and Krishna is the supreme Brahman, then that inquiry ability expands unlimitedly. And we have to let it expand. We can't stifle that by the paramartika, by the vyavaharika aspects of our life and say, no, I have to come to the top of my career and inquire about all kinds of things inordinately, not unnecessarily, so that we can expand that part of our life, which is already fixed anyway. And this is a part of balancing our consciousness, to understand the fact that no matter how hard you work, you're going to get what you get. Now, someone might say, oh, yeah, right, that look where it, you know, got certain people, or, you know, that kind of mentality. But Bhagavatam says, no, you work, you don't give up working, you don't simply abandon it, but you do it just enough so that you can maintain yourself, your body. You have to have your health. You have to be able to inquire clearly, and you should maintain it so that you can foster that spirit of inquiry about Krishna, about Brahman. And not more than that. And not less than that either. And as one goes through one's lifetime practicing, taking shelter of Krishna and having him as our protector and our maintainer, then gradually it becomes a reality. One can actually, that is the reality. It is the reality. It's simply that we realize it. So, in Vrindavan, we see that the devotees are fully dependent on Krishna. We should follow in their footsteps and learn from their example how they take shelter of Krishna. We should emulate that. Now, there's another interesting aspect of risk management and devotional service that I wanted to bring out, because Prabhupada talks about it first in the Nectar Devotion, and I'll read you a paragraph. The one point is that without increasing the number of disciples, there is no propagation of the cult of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sometimes even at a risk, a sannyasi in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may accept even a person who is not thoroughly fit to become a disciple. Later on, by the mercy of such a bona fide spiritual master, the disciple is gradually elevated. However, if one increases the number of disciples simply for some prestige or false honor, he will surely fall down in the matter of executing Krishna consciousness. So here the word risk is used, and it's in relationship to preaching. Someone may preach and then be obligated to take care of someone, give initiation. Prabhupada's godbrother, B.R. Sridhar Maharaj, said that the preacher catches the disciple by shiksha, And the disciple catches the preacher by diksha. Because when someone's preaching from their heart and they have some realized knowledge, then people will come and listen, and actually they'll become captured by it. They'll realize, I can't get around this. I have to surrender. It'll become an imperative in their life. And after that, then they'll become attached to that person. And they'll say, I have to have you and nobody else. I'm not going anywhere else. And that then they catch the guru by diksha. They say, okay, you're mine now. So these things are going on. And then, you know, Prabhupada says that it's a risk that sometimes in, especially in a preaching mission, there are all kinds of people with all kinds of motives. Chatur vidaba jante mam jana sukritino arjuna arto jignasa artarti gyanicha bhartarshava. Who knows what the inner motives are? One thing is that in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatan Goswami compiled the first few chapters, what is the relationship between guru and disciple, and how it takes place, what is the standard process for initiation and so forth. And in that he says that for a year, at least a year, in another place he quotes 3 years, that the guru and disciple should observe one another and see that they're qualified and that there's a relationship. And the spiritual master should see that the disciple is really interested in inquiring and advancing in spiritual life. It's not for some other reason. And the disciple should be also very sure that what is a spiritual master, and that this is a spiritual master because he or she is actually following the Shastra and following the Acharya and so forth, and is in a liberated stage of life because of Shabde Paresha Nishnatam Brahman Yupashramashrayam. These qualifications are that the person must have taken a dip in the ocean of transcendental knowledge and also be situated in Brahman. That is, he or she doesn't have any other interest in life. Not interested in, field hockey or some other topic, you know, some other hobby, you know, and devotional service is among those hobbies or interests or something like that. But fully absorbed, that's the one focus. And so when that observation, mutual observation takes place, then there can be, that's risk management. There can be a high degree of certainty that this person will succeed, most likely to succeed. We used to have that in our high school yearbooks. There's always a category for most likely to succeed. Because the person had certain qualities and habits and said, this guy's going to really make it. Surprise when you go back at the high school reunion 10 years later. What happened to him? Oh, became a bank robber. Well, it's a material nature. Anything can happen. But it's a risk. Risk means danger. Risk means there's a danger. And in a big preaching movement where the bias is towards grabbing everybody, that's Lord Chaitanya's movement. Vage va na magi patra va apatra. There's Lord Chaitanya was simply begging everyone, take it, take it, take it, take it. And he didn't consider who was a fit candidate or unfit candidate. He just took everybody. And Prabhupada says that the Vedic system of initiation is that you have to vet everybody completely, and they have to grow up in a Brahmin family and in the Gurukul and go through this whole process. But in the Pancharatra system, we're looking for the slightest qualification. And when you see the slightest qualification, then grab them. Grab them, bring them in, somehow or other figure out how to bring them up to the standard. And we have faith that it is altogether possible. And Prabhupada did this. You can see in the early days when Jayananda first walked in, Jim, he was driving cab and he had started reading the books and he had faith. And he started coming by the temple, which is now a laundromat down by Kezar Stadium. You can go by and see that original temple. It's still there. And he walked in. Yeah, we can go on a tour. The guy that owns the place is a little, I don't know. When we step in there, he goes, what are you doing in here? We don't want, go out. Anyway, when Jayananda first started coming, Jim, driving his cab, he came by. A couple weeks later, Prabhupada gave him initiation. A couple weeks later. And so forth there. And in the first initiations, Prabhupada, you know, invited everyone up to his room, and someone would say, can he get in too? You know, so, they didn't even know all the principles yet. Prabhupada didn't tell them all that stuff. He just said, sit down. And there was a transformation that took place gradually under the principle yena tena prakarena krishnamana niveshayat. Somehow or other in the beginning, get everyone in and let them think of Krishna. Let them start hearing, because we know the medicine's so potent. This will cure them. This will cure them. But there is a way in which, you know, people change their minds. People can fall down at any time. Even advanced devotees can fall down. And we'll hear some quotes from Prabhupada about that. And so there's always some sort of a risk that's going on. And more about that, I'll read the next quote. This quote is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 21st verse, 21st chapter, 31st verse. Prabhupada says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore stated that the spiritual master who plays the part of Krishna's representative, I'll read that again. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore stated that the spiritual master who plays the part of Krishna's representative has to consume all the sinful reactions of his disciple. Sometimes the spiritual master takes the risk of being overwhelmed by the sinful reactions of the disciples and undergoes a sort of tribulation due to their acceptance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised that one not accept many disciples. So there's a risk there also, that in accepting a disciple, that you take on the sinful reactions. There, you know, it sounds like, you know, like a download of information from a thumb disk or something like that. You know, just look it up, and all of a sudden you're full of these extra sinful reactions or something like that. There's a practical aspect of it too. When you become involved in somebody's life, you have to worry about them. If you have a kid, you have to worry about the kid for what, 16, 25, 36? I saw my parents, they worried about their kids till the second they left their bodies. They don't stop worrying about them. And that's a kind of guru-disciple relationship. Every kind of relationship where you take responsibility for somebody, all of a sudden, their worries, guess what, become your worries. And that takes a toll. That's a risk. And so how many can you handle? You know, how many kids could you raise? Do you want to raise? And so forth. There's a risk in all that. And also there is a transfer of karma, which takes place. As is mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, that just as a king takes on a part of the pious and impious activities of the citizens, so similarly, the guru also accepts these kinds of reactions that come from the disciple. However, if one is fully situated in devotional service, then of course Krishna says, Sarva dharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tong sarva papi bhyo moksha ishami masuchaha. Ultimately, you know, Krishna is absorbing all that, but this requires constant vigilance. Then Prabhupada says in Madhya Lila 22:118, accepting an unlimited number of devotees or disciples is very risky for one who is not a preacher. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, a preacher has to accept many disciples to expand the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is risky because when a spiritual master accepts a disciple, he naturally accepts the disciple's sinful activities and their reactions. Unless he is very powerful, he cannot assimilate all the sinful reactions of his disciples and has to suffer the consequences. Therefore, one is generally forbidden to accept many disciples. Now, what is many disciples? We probably took 5,000 and, you know, one may be too many for somebody. And in a conversation, Prabhupada, you know, in a morning walk conversation that's going on, Prabhupada says, yes, but they are devotees. He's talking about the demigods, but Tamal Krishna, but they are devotees, not fallen. Prabhupada says, they can fall. Everyone can fall. And then Tripurari says, says that a sannyasi should not be anxious for disciples, but should only take those who are qualified. But sometimes, when there's no one qualified, he takes a risk. Prabhupada, yes. One who does not like to take the risk, they do not take the risk of preaching. But one who takes the risk, he is recognized by Krishna immediately. Oh, he is taking a risk. But he must know where to take risk and where he's acting foolishly. Just like Nityananda Prabhu took the risk of being injured, but he was certain that I can deliver him. So this is a very important point, because we have to perform this risk management also in performing our devotional service. First of all, we can't do less than we're capable of, because then we won't advance, and we also won't get Krishna's mercy. No guts, no glory. And if you try to do more than you're qualified for, then you can fall down. That's a fact. And someone who takes on the service of representing Lord Chaitanya as a spiritual master can fall down, and have fallen down, because of taking too much risk and not being careful. And we'll get to that in a minute. It's not because the position of spiritual master means you can't fall down. And this is the supposition of some people. They say spiritual master means impossible to fall down. You can't fall down. And therefore, Prabhupada's the only spiritual master. And obviously, he can't fall down, because, I mean, only a living spiritual master could fall down. The logic is that Prabhupada's the only spiritual master. It's sort of circular reasoning, but this... Why would it be a risk to take on the responsibility of taking others as disciples? Risk means danger. And Prabhupada says it over and over again, that it's a risk. It's a risk. It's a risk. And what does risk mean? It means anything can happen. And therefore, you have to manage risk. You have to be careful. So the conversation goes on to Mal Krishna. You took a great risk also, Prabhupada, by coming to us. Prabhupada laughs. Yes, I have already written that. I was thinking that, what shall I do here? I have come here. As soon as I shall impose these four principles, they will say, go home. But I took that risk. I never said anything palatable against their activities. You can't do this. Don't do this. So, also, this is another kind of calculation that we make all the time. It goes on constantly thinking, how much should we present to the public? And there's this argument sometimes, like, if you preach too directly, you'll just scare away everybody. And therefore, we should scale it down. How much do you want to scale it down? Rabindra Sarup Prabhu said in one class, he said, for years I was having this conversation with other devotees about how to take Krishna out of Krishna consciousness. And then he said, I decided one day, we'll just leave him in and see what happens. But it's a risk. Every time you distribute a book and you say, this is Hare Krishna, or what, you know, you just present it as it is, you're risking that particular interaction, what's going to happen. You could take the safe route and hedge everything and don't say much about anything. Or you can be bold and present. And where's the balance? How do you manage that? To present Krishna consciousness in a way that people will take it, but without, and also not compromising. Prabhupada, Tamal Krishnamurti says, it's hard because some of these are fragments, because it's a conversation. But Prabhupada said, no, what is the use of compromise if there's no good result? Tamal Krishna, someone who compromises, he actually wants followers. Prabhupada, that is not good. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decried, nadanam najanam, I don't want these followers. What is the use of follower if he does not follow? Okay, so the next one is from the CC 24330. Prabhupada said, a spiritual master should not be very anxious to accept a disciple because of his material opulences. Sometimes a big businessman or landlord may approach a spiritual master for initiation. Those who are materially interested are called Vishayis. which indicates that they are very fond of sense gratification. Such Vishayis sometimes approach a famous guru and ask to become a disciple just as a matter of fashion. And we know the story of Gorkishor Das Babaji Maharaj, at least we heard it, that there was one very rich man from Calcutta. He had everything, so he thought, what don't I have? I don't have a guru, so let me get a guru. So Gorkishor Das Babaji Maharaj was famous, and he thought, I'll go get that one. That's the one that will really make me look good. And I'll just tell everyone when I get back to, yeah, it's Gorkishor. That's my guru. And so he went there to offer him something in exchange for this deal, you know. And so he went out to the field where Gorkishor was chanting incessantly. And he said, so Maharaj, you know, I want to be your servant. I want you to be my guru. And I'm willing to offer you anything. And he was thinking, you know, what could he need? He's out here in a field, you know, maybe I'll build him a little house or something, you know, that's nothing. Won't even touch my bottom line. And so Maharaj looked at him and he said, so the only thing I ask, you stay here and don't go home. Stay with me, don't leave. And immediately he got up and ran away. And this is, we're looking for the essence of surrender. Actually, someone may have all kinds of bad qualities, but if they have this one quality that they actually surrender to Krishna, in their heart that they accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that's their goal of life, even if they're fraught, they're riddled with material bad habits, if they have this one quality, that this is the most important thing. This is what we're looking for. That's the real fragrance of the spiritual world, the surrender to Krishna in the heart. And therefore, Rupa Goswami names the different qualities of the Vaishnava. He said the most important one is that their surrender to Krishna. But if someone has an ill motivation performing devotional service, it will come out eventually. We were talking about this last night with Nirkula. We were having this discussion about how if you just hold steady on the basic principle of surrender to Krishna, and you enact that in all the aspects of your life to the best of your ability, whatever you can do now, and you do it behind closed doors, you do it whenever you're wherever you go, that's who you are. And even though you may be the lowest person on the totem pole, so to speak, doesn't matter, because eventually it always comes out. Krishna cream rises to the top. And the real cream, the essence, is to be a saragrahi, to be really surrendered to Krishna. And to have that mood that I'm simply Krishna's servant, and to always be warding off the mist and fog of false ego and bad intentions. And if someone has some wrong intention and then takes more and more responsibility, there's a weakness. Just like in a constructed building, you can have a big, huge building, but if there is a mistake in the construction and in the ground floor, there was some counterfeit cement, which you can buy in India sometimes. The counterfeit cement. They sell you what's real cement, but actually it wasn't created properly. Or also, there are these counterfeit bolts. Were being sold all over the world for many years. They're coming from China, I think. And they're fake bolts. They're supposed to hold a certain amount of weight. And guess what? A lot of the airlines bought those back in the old days. Who knows where they are? But they'll snap under pressure. They won't hold. And so if someone has the fault of a ulterior motive, this is like one of those counterfeit bolts. And then if you build up all kinds of responsibility and take on these things, and if you have that ill motivation, then eventually it will snap, and you'll have to come back to your own level. And so we look at a person's devotional life not in the terms of a few years or even a couple of decades, but we look at the whole lifetime. How did they go through their life? And it wasn't necessarily that they had a perfect record, but they recovered even from slipping, at a certain point. They slipped, but they got back up again. That proves something. And Krishna says that someone who does that, api chet sudaracharo, bhajate mama nanyabhak. Even if it looks really bad, what happened? They get back up again and they continue on with their devotional service with the intention, I'm going to surrender even though I'm the lowest of the low and I have all these bad habits. I'm going to surrender to Krishna. I'll make it. Aham tarasaya paratmanishtam adyasitam purvatamar maharshibi aham tarishami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nasheva yaiva. I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of material existence by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in firm devotion to the Lord Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that inner determination must be there. The motivation must be that I'm going to surrender to Krishna. Now, if a spiritual master or anybody else tries to gain from performing devotional service materially, they'll be tricked. And they'll get the false thing. They won't get the real gold. They'll get fool's gold. So such Vishayas sometimes approach a famous guru and ask to become a disciple just as a matter of fashion. Sometimes Vishayas pose as disciples of a reputed spiritual master just to cover their activities and advertise themselves as advanced in spiritual knowledge. In other words, they want to attain material success. A spiritual master must be very careful in this regard. Such business is going on all over the world. The spiritual master does not accept a materially opulent disciple just to advertise the fact that he has a big disciple. He knows that by associating with such Vishayi disciples, he may fall down. One who accepts a Vishayi disciple is not a bona fide spiritual master. Even if he is, his position may be damaged due to association with an unscrupulous Vishayi. If a so-called spiritual master accepts a disciple for his personal benefit or for material gain, the relationship between the spiritual master and disciple turns into a material affair, and the spiritual master becomes like a smarta guru. Then, next is from the Sisiadi 1731. Now it comes into the how to protect oneself. There's a couple aspects of this. Protecting yourself from risk. 2 points. One is humility, and the other is caution. And the two go together very well, because if you're not humble, you'd start thinking, like, I can do anything. This is a problem, because you can't. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, yet is always prepared to give respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy names of the Lord. That means your devotional service won't be impeded if you keep yourself down. Keep your head down. And stick to your service and be humble and just be grateful for what you have so you don't have to be smacked upside the head. Purport, the grass is specifically mentioned in this verse, and if you are smacked upside the head, you should accept it as a reward of the master. And this, Prabhupada says exactly in that language, is the qualification for advancing devotional service. Those who can accept punishment as a reward, they will make advancement in devotional service. The grass is specifically mentioned in this verse because everyone tramples on it, yet the grass never protests. This example indicates that a spiritual master or leader should not be proud of his position. Being always humbler than an ordinary common man, he should go on preaching the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. How humble should he be? Always humbler than who? An ordinary common man. He says here, being always humbler than an ordinary common man. So if I start thinking like, I'm not an ordinary common man, I'm above ordinary, I'm uncommon and so forth. These are the enemies. And this, you start getting into the risk range. If you go and you look at your insurance, your spiritual assurance adjuster, he'll say, you know, you're at a high risk here. At any time, you can be vanquished because you think you're better than an ordinary common man. But if you keep yourself down and you say, I'm no better than an ordinary common man, I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant, then your risk factor goes down. Always a risk. Risk means danger. Taking a dangerous occupation. So lower your risk factor. feel yourself lower than an ordinary, common man. Not uncommon. I'm lower than ordinary. Doesn't mean you should act like that. It just means you should feel like that. And then finally, Prabhupada says, and this is one of the very philosophical verses which can start a whole big discussion, but it's very important to understand. This is from the third canto, 26th chapter, 23rd verse. The material ego springs up from the mahatattva, which evolved from the Lord's own energy. The material ego is endowed predominantly with active power of three kinds, good, passion, and ignorant. It is from these three types of material ego that the mind, the senses of perception, the organs of action, and the gross elements evolve. Purport. In the beginning, from clear consciousness or the pure state of Krishna consciousness, the first contamination sprung up. That is called false ego, or identification of the body as self. The living entity exists in the natural state of Krishna consciousness, but he has marginal independence, and this allows him to forget Krishna. Originally, pure Krishna consciousness exists, but because of misuse of marginal independence, there is a chance of forgetting Krishna. This is exhibited in actual life. There are many instances in which someone acting in Krishna consciousness suddenly changes. In the Upanishads, it is stated, therefore, that the path of spiritual realization is just like the sharp edge of a razor. The example is very appropriate. One shaves his cheeks with a sharp razor very nicely, but as soon as his attention is diverted from the activity, he immediately cuts his cheek because he mishandles the razor. Not only must one come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, but one must also be very careful. Any inattentiveness or carelessness may cause fall down. I'll read it again. Not only must one come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, but one must also be very careful. Any inattentiveness or carelessness may cause fall down. This fall down is due to false ego. From the status of pure consciousness, the false ego is born because of misuse of independence. We cannot argue about why false ego arises from pure consciousness. So don't even try it. Factually, there is always the chance that this will happen, and therefore one has to be very careful. False ego is the basic principle for all material activities, which are executed in the modes of material nature. As soon as one deviates from pure Krishna consciousness, he increases his entanglement in material reaction. The entanglement of materialism is the material mind, and from this material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest. So herein lies the second law of risk management in devotional service, and that is caution. The first one is humility. Humility means showing a modest or low estimation of one's own importance. It doesn't mean that you have to let people walk all over you, but you have to do your duty. That's another thing. Sometimes people say, if I'm humble and I go to work, then I'll just be stepped on and I won't get anywhere. But it doesn't mean that. It means that you have a low estimation of your own importance. And that means you have a high estimation of Krishna's importance and of the mission of your spiritual master, and you take that as your life and soul. And your own importance, your own intelligence, your own ability to figure out through independent thought how to move in the world, you don't consider that very important. That's humility. So you must have humility to lower your risk profile in devotional service. The lower, the higher your level of humility, the lower your risk of falling from pure consciousness goes. And also, you must be cautious. What does that mean? What does cautiousness mean? It means you have to be vigilant at all times. Don't let Maya have an inch, because she'll take a mile. She's like the salesperson who comes to your door and says, just open a crack. I just want to tell you one thing. And next thing you know, you bought a vacuum cleaner for $2,000 and you already had one. And you didn't need it. And then your wife comes home and then you're really in trouble. So, caution. Caution means to be vigilant, all the time vigilant. Don't think that you're above it. This is another thing Prabhupada points out. He said, in the face of Maya, in the glare of Maya, don't think, I'm a devotee. I'm a Paramahamsa. I'm immune to this. You'll be burned. You'll be burned. Prabhupada used to have a separate kitchen in his room up in Los Angeles. A little in the closet, a little burner in there so his servant could serve him, because every time he had a brahmachari and he let him into the kitchen and he started associating with the women in there, next thing he'd come up and go, "Ah, Prabhupada, I want to get married now." Prabhupada said, "Move the kitchen upstairs." And risk management. You have to be careful. How are you going to walk? Where are you going to walk? Who? Where are you going to look? Jayato vishayan pumsam, sangasteshu pajayate. You study that verse. It says when you contemplate the objects of the senses, you're going to go there. You'll be there. You'll be part of it. It'll attach itself to you like glue. And you're going to take years and years of contemplation, of endeavor to get it loose again. Don't start it in the first place. Be careful. Be careful how you attach yourself to the material world. You look at something and you think, "Oh, that's nice. That would look good on me." And next thing you know, you're walking around with it shadowing you for the next 2 years, thinking, "If I could have had that, if I could have had that." That's how sticky the material world is. So devotees are humble and they're careful. And this is what lowers your risk of falling from the position of devotional service. And especially if you're taking responsibility, you must have these qualities all the time. All the time they have to be there. The second that pride rears its head, you'll be smashed. And when you're not careful, it's a bad example for others. Even if you were above it, even if you are above it, you should set the example for others by being careful. One devotee tells a story about how Prabhupada, after an engagement, it was in Europe, and they were standing outside a restaurant waiting for the ride to come. And so the devotee was concerned. Prabhupada was having to stand there, and it was maybe strenuous for some time. And he said, "Prabhupada, would you like to sit down here?" And Prabhupada looked over and said, "What is that place where the seats were?" And he said, "Oh, it's a restaurant." And Prabhupada said, "I cannot sit there. I cannot sit there. Because how would it look?" And and that this is caution, being very careful where you sit, how you speak, what comes out of your mouth. These things can come back to and will come back to bite you if you're not careful. So be careful, be humble, lower your risk profile in devotional service. Hare Krishna. Questions or comments? Yes.
Prabhu, I have a question. Like, you give the story of businessman and Gaurakrishna Das Maharaj, Babaji Maharaj. So, like, in that case, like, if one is don't have any motive to get guru, but is go to ask a guru about the initiation, but same time, he never, thought about, surrendering or stay there for a while, for a lifetime. So what is, criteria? It's like, if you go and ask initiations for the guru, you should also, be prepared, if guru asks to stay there, then you have to stay.
Yeah, it's a risk. we surrender to Krishna, and then he might ask us, do this or that. And it really depends. But it's, it's not like a computer game or something like that where you hit the wrong button and then you're finished, or you have to start over. But it's a relationship. And that's why relationship with a guru is personal. You have to have a personal relationship, because the guru should be able to engage a disciple properly. You have to be able to see that what can this person handle? Not simply just, every single person is like, "Okay, surrender, stay here." This was a specific case, with Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj and this man who was obviously a charlatan. But there's a way in which there's a person who's expert in engaging others should see what is their capability and engage them accordingly. And part of the examination period for choosing a guru, there's a year. Or 3 years or more to see that, there's a compatible relationship here. It should be goodwill on both sides, that I want this person to advance, and the other person's thinking, how will I properly engage in service? And of course there has to be adjustment and ready to surrender. We have to be ready to surrender. And that's what that story points out. We shouldn't go there with no intention of surrender, because then it'll just be a farce. But at the same time, we should trust the fact and understand that there's a way in which a proper guide will guide you in a way that you can handle it and adjust it if it's not working. Hansapriya? Hold it. Keep that one up here. Yeah.
So, Prabhuji, you mentioned one of the points I really liked was the inquirer. The inquirer can be a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And would you please elaborate a little bit more on it, to inquire what really matters the most? Because I think that helps to reduce quite a bit of risk factor.
Well, Krishna said it to Brahma. It's the original Bhagavatam. Etavad eva jignasam tapva jignasanatmanaha anvayav yatarikabhyam yat syat sarvata sarvada. He said, one should inquire in all times, in all places, in all circumstances. It means your whole life should be geared around inquiring about Krishna. What does that mean? You want to hear. You want to hear because you have faith in the Shastra. You know that that's taking you back to Godhead. You know that that's the real thing. And therefore, the rest of your activities in your life, what you have to get done, is simply going on so you can come to this point. Now I have my time that I can hear and I can actually perform devotional service. The other activities of our life are not meant to be the focal point. They're meant to be, we're doing them out of necessity. And as our capacity to hear grows, tavat karmana kuravita na nirvidyeta yavata mat kata shravanado va shravan. Okay, it's in the shloka book. You can look at it. Tavat kuravita. Tavat karmana kuravita na nirvidyeta yavata mat kata shravanado va shadayavan na jayate, something like that. Krishna says, 278, that as long as you don't have full faith in hearing and chanting and performing the nine processes of devotional service, then you go on with all your other activities. And to the degree that you develop that faith, then your life becomes out of necessity. Hearing and inquiring becomes a necessity, becomes the mainstay of your life. You can't imagine doing anything else, and whatever else you have to do is minimized so that you can increase that. And that should be the progress in our life. How does the verse go? Tavat karmana kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata mat kata shravanadava shadha yava najayate. So as long as one has not awakened full faith, you have to go on doing all these other balanced rules and regulations in the material world. But the ultimate goal is to come to this point of having full attention on Krishna. This means tasmad ekena manasa bhagavan satvatam pati shrotavya kirtitavyascha dyeya pujascha nityada. So this is Sutta Goswami, and he says, with one-pointed attention. What does that mean? Like the arrow maker. The king comes through town with a big band and all the jugglers and everyone, swallowing flames and everything like that. And someone comes an hour later and said, did you see the king? He said, what king? He was making his arrow so straight that he had no comprehension of any distraction. He was fully focused. And in the same way, tasmad ekena manasa, the mind has one-pointed attention, bhagavan satvatam pati. And it's nice, this is the... Satvatam means the devotees, the pati. Who is the husband of the devotees? It's Krishna. And therein lies this point about protection. The husband's protecting. And you say, he's the pati, so we're taking full shelter of him. We don't have to worry about so many other things, because we realize the more I simply do this one thing, shraddha shabde, Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hoy. All the other things are done automatically. And so we have to cultivate that. And it's cultivatable. It's altogether possible, because that's our main interest in life. I'm only interested in other things because they're reflections of the real thing. And once I realize that those are just reflection, the real thing is somewhere else, I become genuinely interested in it. Genuinely interested in it. Yes.
Dandavas Prabhuji. You were talking about when we are chanting, there are so many other thoughts which come, the material problems, and our attitude should be, if those things will be taken care of. Did I hear it right?
Yeah.
So would it be a contradiction to the one of the offenses that is mentioned while chanting, that having material attachments while chanting, even after hearing so many things on the subject matter, right? So I was thinking, would that be even the fact that we are hoping that those material things will be taken care of, would it be an offense against the Holy Name?
No, not an offense. This is actually the devotee, the context is the devotee realizes that there may be so many necessities, but my prime necessity is to take shelter of Krishna. He's the protector. He's my maintainer. Therefore, I won't worry about these things, at least not while I'm chanting. At least for that time, take that opportunity to just take shelter of Krishna. Practice. See what it feels like. And miraculously, Krishna takes away those anxieties. And it's not a sin to have desires. It's a sin to be attached to them. That's the offense. The offense is to maintain them. The desires enter like rivers into the ocean. The ocean's not disturbed. So as long as one has a material body and mind, there are going to be influences that enter. But the devotee disconnects from those because he's connected on a different level. He can even see them, but he doesn't identify with them. So they're there, but he's not attached to them. But if you're a kama-kami, it means you become implicated because you identify with the desires and you think, oh, I have to maintain them, they're mine. And your lifestyle degrades because now you're emboldened to these things. You have to maintain them. You have to stand up for them even, which is even more unseemly. Stand up for the material world and your material desires that you're harboring. That doesn't look good. So, we must cultivate this attachment to Krishna, and we must cultivate attachment to desires to serve Krishna, and then distinguish between those and those desires which are actually superfluous. Because in the watering process, both the weeds and the creeper grows. I was just noticing this the other day. Some nice spring rain came, and I just finished weeding my whole garden. And I was thinking, okay, here we go again. They're going to come up now because there's seeds everywhere. And as soon as it rains, I was thinking, all the plants I want are just loving it. But all the other plants are going to say, okay, here we come. And when you water, everything grows. So you also, this is one of the points, you have to be vigilant. Not only must one come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, one must also be careful. Careful means you must weed. And you also have to carefully study what's a weed and what's actually a creeper. Am I taking too much time? Do we have to pack and stuff?
No.
Okay. Nothing. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Shmo.
Okay, and the number, some are already texting in. I don't know how they got the number, but the number to text in is 650-245-7018. We welcome all our online listeners today. Thank you very much. We're so glad you're there. Just so you know, in a couple of weeks, we're moving into our new temple where I hear there's more wires in that one temple than in all of Silicon Valley put together. Because we had asked for a Pukka sound studio, like the new temple is going to be like a movie set for broadcasting out. So we're trying to connect to more and more devotees around the world. But if you want to text in a question, 650-245-7018.
This is Pratibha Mataji from Sacramento, and she's saying thanks for a wonderful class. And Your statement that the slightest qualification is what our movement is looking for is very, very encouraging. Some days are so discouraging, even in our endeavor to better our spiritual life, but these words keep enthusiasm and patience going full throttle. Thank you.
What a nice comment, and thanks for joining, Pratibha Mataji. We read it in a verse earlier in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, where Brahma's saying, so you already benedicted Putana because she came dressed up as your mother, and you gave her position, mother. Now what are you going to give to the residents of Vrindavan who are completely surrendered? What more do you have to give? And this is Krishna's nature. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bando Jagatpate. He's the friend of the fallen, and he's an ocean of mercy. That's good news, really good news. And so he takes the slightest qualification of a person and he augments it. And the devotees are even more so. And this is shown in the story when Kala Krishnadas, who was Lord Chaitanya's assistant in traveling through South India, he fell down in the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by becoming attracted to some Bhattaharis. They're these kind of nomadic tribes that, they would attract people with women and get them into their camp. So he fell for it. He was a Brahmin. He was with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he went there. And Mahaprabhu went to their camp. He grabbed his servant by the hair and pulled him back. And even those Bhattaharis, they tried to attack Mahaprabhu, which was a mistake because their weapons fell on themselves. But when Mahaprabhu got back to Jagannath Puri, he called in Kala Krishnadas and he said, before some of the other devotees, just see the character of this person. He came to serve me, and he left right in the middle. I had to go grab him and pull him back. I said, I have no more service for him. And Kala Krishnadas began crying. I mean, what is to be rejected by Mahaprabhu? And then the devotees conspired. They got together and said, let's do something for him. We got to keep him in. And they came up with this plan that they would send Kala Krishnadas all the way back to Navadvip to announce that Mahaprabhu had just returned from South India. And that was a big service because he would be like a hero. You know, the messenger gets all the accolades also. And so they went to Mahaprabhu and said, we need somebody to go back to Navadvip to announce that you've come here. Can we send? And Mahaprabhu, you know, knew what they were thinking. They didn't say exactly who. And he said, yes, do as you wish. So they sent, go, you go. So they kept him in. So this is the mercy of the devotees. They're always looking at even somebody who falls out of the grace of the holy name. The devotees, they go and they try to bring them back and say, chant, just chant. And no matter what situation you're in, this should be our mood. This is the mood of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Inanda. We should always be looking for the smallest qualification that someone has and then fan it. We call this fan the spark. It's the fan the spark principle. Find a spark and then fan it. And if you live your life like that, always looking for the qualification, that you'll be encouraged yourself, because Krishna will encourage you, because that's the work, that's his actual intention for the material world, is to bring everybody up. Yes.
So we talked about, you know, the modes of material nature quite a few times, I mean, in this lecture, right? Is it devotee constantly under the influence of these three modes, or like the more he advances, he gets immune to those modes?
To the degree that we advance, to that degree we're unaffected by the three modes of material nature. So one must become completely free from the contamination of the modes of material nature. We do that by performing devotional service. Mam chayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogina sevate sagunan samatityai tan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. One who is constantly engaged in service rises above the three modes of material nature. And there is a description by Kapiladeva, which we recited in a similar class a couple months ago, about devotional service in the three modes of material nature. One may be affected by the mode of ignorance and still go on performing devotional service. But that's devotional service tinged by ignorance. It may also be affected by passion. It may be affected by goodness. But then there's transcendental devotional service beyond the three modes of material nature. And step by step, as one continues the process, one will rise to this position of, of being completely unencumbered by the modes of material nature, no more tinge. This is pure devotional service, and that's our aspiration. Hare Krishna. SKP, and then Sundarananda.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. You told in the class, like, don't think I am above it. Means the pride which creeps into our heart, like it works in the Sankirtan, that like as soon as I knock the door and they took a set or some book, or like I feel, oh, I done it. Then next 10 houses, nobody takes it. So, means then we are not the doer. Like, you know, as soon as we think I'm giving book and they are taking, I am the, like, you know, like doer, then it doesn't work out in that way. So I personally felt that like we are not the controller. Thank you. For
that's why Sankirtan is such a nice service. You get instant feedback from your environment. It's very helpful because you have to fine-tune in order to walk that fine line. That you have to be confident, you have to present, but at the same time you have to, you know, fully depend on Krishna and be very humble. That and when you're not, you know, that subtle change, then you'll be smashed.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, Sundar.
Prabhu, first of all, thank you for the wonderful class. It has so many nice instructions. That personally I would like to take it to my heart and follow. I had a question regarding initially when you started the lecture with how Krishna is a protector, and you give the example of the devotees in Vrindavan. And for me personally, I think it's easy for me to accept it for my own sake, but when it comes to my family, I somehow become overly protective than even if I would protect myself in such a situation. So how to handle such a...
That's explained by Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad says in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, Balasyaneha Sharanam Pitaro Nrisimha Nartasya Chaganam Udanmati Majato No Taptasya Tat Pratividir Yaihanjisheshtas Tavad Bibo Tanubutam Twarupekshitanam. So upeksha means indifference. And he says, my Lord, if you're indifferent to somebody, nobody can help him. And therefore he concludes that the parents cannot really protect their children. And medicine cannot really protect a patient. And a boat on water can't protect a drowning man if the Lord doesn't get involved. If he doesn't sanction it, it won't happen. So then Prabhupada discusses in the purport, what does this mean? Does it mean that we don't care for our children? We don't do the best we can? If we see a man drowning on the water, do we just say, well, the boat won't do it, God will do it? No, we have to make the endeavor, but we must always be aware, fully conscious, that a Krishna has to bless it. And that will give you relief, because although you do your due diligence, you do the best you can. And the best you can is dependent on Krishna's mercy, because you can't move your arms, your legs, or anything. You can't even transfer funds from one place to another unless Krishna sanctions it. It all has to work. And it's a miracle that anything works, and that miracle is coming from Krishna. So we should be aware of the fact that, yes, I do my due diligence to protect, but don't be overcome by it. And you can resist being overcome by it by remembering that actually Krishna is the one who's sanctioning. Okay? All right. Yes.
So, Prabhu, I'm wondering, what does this taking risk translate to me, or... You know, a neophyte devotee.
What is it? You mean
taking risks for Krishna?
Preaching? Taking risks for Krishna?
Yeah.
Well, it means that you find out what the next step is and you try to take it. Just like when you're climbing a ladder, it's a risk. Every step is a risk, but you have to look at the next rung in the ladder and say, you analyze it and you say, okay, it's higher than the other one. I could just stay where I am on the rung that I'm on now, but I'm going to move up to the next rung. and you make your best calculation possible that, okay, if I move my leg, it worked the last time, and, you know, I didn't slip off, I didn't fall into the abyss, now I'm going to move up, I'm going to take the next step. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this example. He says that we have to move up. Because if you don't move up and just say, no risk, I'll just let Prabhupada take all the risk. I'll let Jesus Christ take all the risk. He take all the risk, and I won't do anything. I'll just be, I'm a lowly person. I'm unqualified. That's bogus. You have to become qualified. You're also part and parcel of Krishna. You're supposed to become qualified. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, you're a rascal. He said, if you don't become guru, then you're a rascal. Lord Chaitanya ordered everyone, become guru. Amaragnaya guru hanataradesh. I order you, become guru. That means you have to improve. To improve, you have to take the next step. You have to say, what is the next step? You take the calculation and you move up to the next point. And, you know, there's risk management involved. You have to look at it and say, does it work? Does it? And then there's a leap of faith that you have to say, I'm going to go for it, based on this understanding that Krishna will protect me. And if you try to go too fast, however, then there's a possibility you can slip. So it's risk management. You have to calculate it and move forward. Okay. Yes? Another text just came in, so after Sundar.
Just to add to that point, Prabhu, yes. I mean, the risk can be taken in consultation with devotees, senior devotees.
Yes. To get your risk management consultants together? Yeah, this you should definitely do it every step. Look at Prabhupada. Before he took sannyas, he went and asked a bunch of people. It wasn't that all of a sudden it came in a flash and he said, I'm going to be a sannyasi. It doesn't work like that. He had dreams, and he was looking at those dreams and seeing his spiritual master coming in his dreams saying, come with me, take sannyas. And Prabhupada's reaction, he said, I was horrified. How am I going to make this step? And then he went to other godbrothers and he said, you know, I'm a vanaprastha now. I'm getting this, you know, indication I should take sannyas. Should I do it? How should I do it? And they gave him different advice. He weighed all the advice and then he acted. So you have to analyze. And that's why Prabhupada said you have to be independently thoughtful. It's not some robotic performance. It's actually, you have to get feedback from Krishna in your heart. Look at Madhavendra Puri, you know, the way he did his devotional service. He was getting feedback from Krishna at every step. And then, you know, how to move to the next stage, where to offer make his offerings and so forth. So we have to do that carefully. And the text just came in.
Can I ask you a question?
After this text.
So this is Jim Prabhu from San Diego.
Arjun.
Jim.
Oh, Jim. Hare Krishna, Jim. Thanks for checking in.
So he says, thank you for the class. My wife and I were talking about the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and she asked about avoiding sense objects. I told her that it isn't the sense objects we are trying to avoid, since we can't. It's attachment to sense objects that we need to avoid. Then today you were saying the same thing in the class, Jay.
Hare Krishna. Good. Confirmed. Okay, Sukeshwari, did you have a...
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I have a question followed to what Prabhuji was asking. How do we separate, differentiate between endeavor and over-endeavor when we are trying to do something?
How do you separate what's...
I mean, how do we
endeavor
distinguish between...
Endeavor and over-endeavor.
And where do we stop?
Way.
What is
you
it?
Have to analyze it and see. Because you have to take various factors into consideration. There's shreyas and prayas. There's a long-term and there's short-term benefit. And, for instance, if you decide you're going to stay up all night every night to perform some Herculean task, then you may then have to sleep all day the next day and the next week and so forth, and you realize that, so you have to calculate it in. So it's something that's taken in a balanced way in consultation with your own mind and intelligence and with other devotees and so forth about what's over endeavor. And you should have guidance about all these things. Devamrita Swami points out that bhakti means guidance. We're always taking guidance. Why should we be without guidance? I mean, the material world sort of like, we take our own guidance because we want to ignore Krishna's instruction. But Krishna has given us a plethora of instructions, and there's so many instructions that are all congruent, that all fit together. And if we cultivate all those, we can understand how to work, how to not over-endeavor, how to work properly in devotional service and so forth.
Thank you.
So take good guidance.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Okay. All right. We have to do the Guru Puja. And, yes? You want to ask a question?
Okay. I'm interested because I'm making a very deep study of the Krishna conscious literature given by Srila Prabhupada. I'm wondering I find that he has a different, this same sannyas guru is different guru than Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and he accepted another sannyas guru. Is that something that is traditional to the Gaudiya Vaishnava line, that one would accept a sannyas guru is different than, say, a guru who has given Harinam
His
initiation?
His guru had already left.
Oh, I see.
That's why he accepted sannyas. But yes, under different circumstances, one may accept a different sannyas guru. But in Prabhupada's case, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had already left, so there was no question of it. Otherwise, he would have taken from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta.
Okay, that's my only question. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, everyone online. Thank you, everyone in-house. Vrindavan, what's your question?
Thank you for the nice class. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so...